Okay, so good morning, everyone, and thank you for coming out early this morning to hear our talks. I appreciate it. I'd like to acknowledge my co-author, Farzana Kapadia, who is, you know, my day spouse sitting in the audience there, who does all these wonderful things with me. So thank you for being here, Farzana. I have no relationships to disclose. I'm going to just do a little background here before I get to the details of my talk, just present some information which I'm sure all of you are aware of. The continual rise in HIV infections in the MSM population. I'm going to go between MSM and gay. I'm going to try to say gay, okay? How do we feel about that? Good. Over the course of the last 4 years, primarily gay men constitute the majority of infections in our country, some 64% in 2012, and among gay men, primarily racial ethnic minority men, as you can see from this chart, African American and Hispanic men. This phenomenon is also evidenced in my own city, New York City, where we see here a rise in infections in gay men over the course of the last 4 years, with a stable and actually a dip in some other populations in the city. And interestingly, what we've also seen in our city over the course of the last few years is that a slight decrease in infections in gay men over age 30 with a steady and slight increase in younger gay men. And this is really what inspired our work over the course of the last several years. And again, in New York City, this see the same sort of disparity, not only in terms of sexual orientation, but also in terms of race and ethnicity. So this led us many years ago, first working with the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene with Lane Cutler to do some preliminary work, led us to the development of this prospective cohort study that we affectionately call the P18 cohort study. We call it the P18 cohort study because the men who we engaged in our study were 18-ish, we're going to say ish for now. I like to also make a joke that I think it was the 18th study we actually did at our center, but so therefore it became P18. So this is a prospective cohort study that examines sexual risk behavior, substance use, and mental health, but also looks at resiliencies in the population of young gay men, a new generation of young gay men, because this guy would argue that so many of the models that we're using around HIV prevention these days are based on models that were based on my generation, and my generation is no longer 18, right? Okay. Ish. and the work that P18 is based on is, as many of my colleagues probably are also doing in their work, is informed by syndemic theory. Syndemic theory first postulated by the amazing Meryl Singer, then espoused by researchers like Ron Stahl, taken up by folks like Brian Wustansky and myself, and really a theory that really looks at fundamental causes and looks at the likelihood that psychosocial burdens increase the risk for negative health outcomes for sexual minority men. And so this is really the heart and soul of our work, looking at how these psychosocial burdens, discrimination, homophobia, structural inequalities, place young gay men at risk for the acquisition of HIV and other health problems. Because I will argue that HIV is just part of a constellation of health problems that young gay men can continue to face. So what we wanted to do in the first 5 years of this study was to develop a measurement model around syndemic theory to delineate risk and protective bases and to determine the extent to which these syndemics vary by race, ethnicity, social class, housing instability in a sample of HIV-negative YMSM. The P18 study design is diagrammed here. We recruited between 2009 and 2011 via both active and passive techniques. Eligibility criteria with the men were 18 or just slightly 19. Right, because there were men who were calling us up who we scheduled for baseline. They were like, but I turn 19 tomorrow. So we engaged those men in our cohort also. They self-reported HIV negative, and they had to report sex with a man in the last 6 months. Their sexual orientation did not matter, and as we know, during this period, sexual identity is developing. And so 49% of the men who were ineligible for the study were ineligible because they were over age 19. And the study sample was 16, and 1% of those men, 6 cases, were identified as HIV prevalent cases in the sample. So the men came in every 6 months, baseline up to month 36. They took part in an audiocastie assessment, which had a variety of different measures, calendar-based techniques to look at drug use and sexual risk behavior, really detailed data using the timeline follow-back, and then HIV antibody testing with pre-test and post-test counseling, and then urine-based drug screening to look for the presence of metabolites for drugs, which kind of worked okay-ish, Among the measures we had in our CASI were sociodemographic, a variety of psychosocial factors, neighborhood information, information about sexual behavior, substance use, mental health, and of course the antibody test. And this is a snapshot from one of our papers of what the sample looks like. Primarily, the sample, we really oversampled black and Hispanic men. The cohort is continuing now for the next 5 years. We've opened up the cohort again. We are now recruiting men who are ages 22 to 23. We've been able to retain 400 of these original 600 men and are adding 250 more. As you can see, they are diverse in terms of their perceived socioeconomic status, which we have found to be a really excellent measure of socioeconomic status. Perception really matters here. And the men started having anal intercourse, receptive around age 16, the same around sort of anal intercourse. We see differences in the demographic factors by race, ethnicity, in terms of SES, in terms of school enrollment, in terms of foreign-born status, in terms of ethnic identity. And so there are multiple layers at play here when we think about race, because race is just not race, right? Race interacts with a variety of other different factors. And as many researchers have shown, not surprisingly, while the literature supports high rates of infection in young black gay men, young black gay men are not having more sex or more unprotected sex than white gay young men. And so this is really critical to our conversation here, because one of the things that I will go around always saying is, you know, we can't just say, well, race is a factor, because I don't know what I can really do about, you know, modifying race. I can modify the factors associated with, you know, black men living in more unfortunate circumstances than white men, but just saying that black men have more risk doesn't really help us here. In fact, they don't have more risk. So this speaks to bigger issues at play here with regard to this particular population. And one of the first papers we published was our attempt to actually create a measurement model of the syndemic, where we were able to show that really mental health and drug use were very intimately linked with each other. They actually created a second-order model. Others have since been able to replicate this. And that second order factor of mental health and drug use is associated with unprotected sexual behavior. And so let me get to what I want to talk about today, which is to look at factors associated with incident HIV infection across the 36 months, along person factors and along behavioral factors and along contextual factors. So in terms of what the analysis that we did is we looked at estimates for time to HIV positive test results. We did Kaplan-Meier probabilities and then developed Cox proportional hazard models to formally test significant differences in time to HIV seropositive test result. So participants in the study completed at least 6 study visits, a median of 7. There was about 2.5 years of follow-up, and we identified 43 HIV seroconversions. That's incidence rate of 2.85 per 100 person years and a cumulative incidence of 7.2%. It's a lot, right? The incidence rate actually slightly lower than other published papers about incidence rates. Maybe, honestly, you know, we're having an intervention effect here. The minute you ask a question, people think about their behaviors. I'm sure we're transferring some, you know, protection here. But nonetheless, 43 new infections over the course of the study. In terms of looking at demographics by seroconversion here, what we see is that both race, ethnicity, and perceived familial SES are highly associated with seroconversion, with black men at high risk for HIV seroconversion, and low SES men also at high risk. When we look at behavioral factors, the one that plays out, and again supported by the literature, is age at sexual debut in terms of sex with another man. And when we looked at contextual factors, we got less robust results, but here's why. Because we had UHF data on the men who lived in New York City, but because New York City spreads out, and we have Nassau County and Suffolk County and Westchester County and Jersey, right, that complicated our measure. So we lost some of those men in these analyses. We're trying to determine how best to handle that moving forward, because when we talked about New York metropolitan, New York, we were talking about New York metropolitan area. I've got 5 minutes, guys. So here's a Kaplan-Meier survival curve that looks at time to seroconversion by perceived familial SES. And what you can see here is that the gay men of lower perceived SES were more likely to seroconvert more rapidly, and a pattern that is replicated when you look at race ethnicity, where black men were more likely to seroconvert more rapidly. And here is our crux proportional hazard model here, which again shows the role of race ethnicity and the role at age of sexual debut, which with the odds adjusted hazard ratio of 7.46 for black men, 7.99 for mixed others. I hate the mixed others category. It has the API group in there too, but I can tell you that the Asian Pacific Islander men, none of them seroconverted. These were mostly mixed race men who seroconverted in this particular sample. So in conclusions, what do we find? We know that there are significant racial inequalities in HIV incidence for black MSM, some sevenfold increase, and mixed other MSM, particularly mixed MSM in terms of HIV seroconversion. What do we know? We know that perceived familial SES at baseline was significantly associated with seroconversion by variable analyses. In the multivariable analyses, it was still held up somewhat. The neighborhood stuff didn't play out, although I will argue and I will try to show you with some pictures that I believe that the neighborhood factors are more at play. And my colleague Farzana has just launched and almost finished a really interesting study using GPS to track a subset of the men over the course of a week. We provide them a little GPS monitor. They wear it for a week. We're able to see where they navigate all over the city over the course of the week. I think that will be much more informative for us because neighborhood in and of itself where people live is not enough. There are residential neighborhoods, there are social neighborhoods, there are sexual neighborhoods. And we know in New York City that people navigate all these different spaces and different behaviors are enacted in these different spaces. So the neighborhood factors really need to be teased out a lot more. So here is a map of New York City with the five boroughs, including Staten Island. I'm not sure why it's still a borough, but it is. And it shows you where the men were recruited in New York City across the five boroughs. Here is where the men were recruited, all the hot spots there where the circles are. Interestingly, here is the poverty level in New York City. And here is where our men are coming from. It kind of maps onto that. And here is where the HIV diagnoses are in New York City. And again, this is where our men are coming from. So we're doing a really good job of getting the young men into our study from those neighborhoods. What did I just do wrong? This is people with HIV/AIDS, right? And again, mapping onto that. So one last point, sexual debut. Not surprisingly, men who engage in sex at younger ages are more likely to seroconvert more rapidly. It raises some question about the role of sexual education in schools. What role and responsibility do we have to teach young gay men about safer sex practices in schools? And they're clearly not getting it there. And I think this finding that happens over and over and over again, which one could argue is a probability game. You start having sex earlier, you're more likely to seroconvert, right? That's a probability game in some ways. Nonetheless, speaks to potential intervention at younger ages and the engagement of schools in those interventions. Finally, I just think that what was really, really tells us is that, you know, for me, you know, saying race is a factor in HIV seroconversion is not enough. It's not simply about race. We need to understand the relative contributions of biological, behavioral, psychosocial, and structural factors and how these factors all interplay with each other. Not a simple task at hand here. We know that HIV is a disease and other health disparities are diseases that are understood more than by social cognitive models because human beings are not rational operators, as we all know. And I leave you with this model that I had the pleasure of developing with my colleagues Rich Wolitsky at the CDC and Greg Millett, that provides a potential way to think about HIV moving forward. HIV is one of many of the health problems that young gay men face, and all of these health problems being driven by biological, behavioral factors, and psychosocial and structural factors. And finally, I'd like to acknowledge my amazing team at the Center for Health Identity, Behavior, and Prevention Studies. That's a subset of them over there. Aren't they very cute? And of course, NIDA for funding this work and for continuing to fund this work. Thank you very much.